At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to a brand new episode of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Knowing Wheel returns this week for episode 234. And Jamie and I are returning to discuss the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. Of course, we kind of downplayed this race last week. We said the saving grace could be the tyres. And I think for Imola, for a dry Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, Jamie, which I think goes to show how low the bar is, it wasn't half bad.
It wasn't bad at all, was it? A lot of that was down to safety cars at the right time, or at a good time.
For certain people.
But yes, it was decent, wasn't it? It wasn't the worst Imola race by a long shot. And yeah, as I said on Thursday, which I got ridiculed for by Matt, the tyres made a big difference. So well done, Pirelli.
I never remember ridiculing you.
First time in about, I want to say, getting on for a decade that the tyres have made a positive impact on the race.
Yeah, you're probably not far off, to be completely honest with you. Of course, we spoke heading into the weekend, obviously, about Franco Colapinto replacing Jack Doohan. Obviously, Imola probably being gone. We've still had no confirmation, so I think that's it quietly kind of bundled out.
I think it's the BBC put an article of, like, the best photos from the 25 years of Imola, so it looks like
it's probably gone.
Probably gone. But I'm not that sad about it. And at least we got a good send-off. So,
no,
there we go.
No, it was certainly not the worst race in the world. So, you know, hopefully we won't look back as fans and kind of go, yeah, thank God that's gone again. If the last race was terrible. I think had it obviously been ran in 23, cancelled in 23 and then ran last year, wasn't it? Because apart from it was a close finish, it wasn't a particularly great race either. I think he would have probably left.
I was there. It was fun. But
yeah, exactly. But anyway, let's move into the weekend then. Jamie, obviously, we don't really tend to talk about free practice much because not a lot happened. Max Verstappen complained. Drivers tried to get
there. Colapinto crashed. That was quite funny.
He did crash in practice.
So did Hajar, and so did Bortoletto.
Yeah, there were a few rookie mistakes. But if someone's going to take crash of the weekend, it's got to be Yuki Tsunoda in Q1, hasn't it? Fair play to the kid. That was good going.
That was a massive one. That was huge. And it didn't look like when we first got onto the wreckage, it was like, that looks like a fairly big crash, but nothing major. And you watch it on the replay, it's like, flip it out. That's amazing that he just got out of his car and walked straight away. Huge crash. And he hit one of the marshall posts, like the yellow lights, and the catch fencing.
Yeah, he did very well. Did very well. Say, it was a proper old-school style crash for an old-school style circuit. But like you said, obviously, the most important thing, Yuki able to walk away from that one unharmed, of course, as we would expect. I saw a lot of people online giving the halo a lot of praise for that one. It was, in fact, the rollover hoop that saved him there, not the halo in this incident. But still, you know, modern safety of a Formula One car. I believe that's only the second ground effect car we've seen flip. Which is quite an impressive record, isn't it? Yeah, I was trying to think back to the last time I saw a Formula One car flip. And obviously you had Zhou in 22. But I don't think we had any. Because you kind of feel like we don't get many flips nowadays. Which is
You don't see the underside of F1 cars that much, do you?
No, apart from when they're getting creamed at Monaco.
Max Verstappen on top of Lewis Hamilton in Monza. But that was before ground effect.
Yeah. You obviously had Ericsson's huge one at Monza a few years ago as well, back in like 18. In practice,
yeah.
Obviously, yeah, right. Stroll as well.
Alonso over the top of Leclerc in Belgium when we were both there.
Yep. That was Hülkenberg's fault, let's not forget.
It was. But yeah, modern safety in F1, very, very good. And to be fair, one thing that Imola is good for, since we were saying it's a terrible venue a second ago, I do like old school tracks where there's not just tarmac runoff areas everywhere, because when people make mistakes, it's actually punished, and that is a very good thing for the sport, I think, because it just puts more pressure on.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, it can go too far when you got Monaco, where because there's so much pressure on it, nobody pushes.
Yeah, everybody races at 80% instead.
The nice balance is somewhere like Imola, somewhere like Silverstone, where if you go off, you're on the grass, you're on the gravel. You're not out of the race, but you lose a lot more time than you do at Bahrain or in Miami. So
yeah, you should be. Yeah. To be fair, I think Bahrain actually strikes a fairly good balance in a lot of places, because it's still got a lot of dust and gravel as well around the circuit. I mean, let's be fair, obviously Yuki, had there been tarmac runoff area there, he still wasn't saving it. That car was going into a wall, because the Giovinazzi chicane is obviously very unforgiving for that kind of thing. But it was, yeah, like we said, obviously very, very happy to see him walk away, of course, and obviously ready for the Grand Prix Sunday. It was still Jack Doohan's as well, back at Suzuka. 180 miles an hour into the wall, wasn't even winded.
Yeah.
He's quite impressive.
No. And such a spinning car is also way worse for you as a person inside it, isn't it? The what's it called? Not vertigo. What I'm thinking of.
Oh, that's going to annoy me now, and we're going to remember it 25 minutes from now. But I know exactly what you're on about.
Yeah, I can't remember what the term is. If you know the term, leave it in the comments. When a car is spinning, and those kind of internal forces that would mess you around are a lot worse than going into wall head on. Speaking of going into wall head on, Franco Colapinto at the end of qualifying makes a fairly high profile mistake, and was it a corner later than what Tsunoda did?
No, corner before.
And hilariously, did you see Jack Doohan's expression on the social media when this happened?
Oh, Jamie, honey, baby, sweetie. Jamie, what? First of all, you mean Mick Doohan?
No, I mean Jack.
What are you referring to then, out of interest?
There was a video of Jack Doohan. He was in an interview at the same time, for whatever reason, at the end of Q1. And he saw Colapinto crash on the screen and just smirked to himself.
Okay, I thought you were referring to the Mick Doohan Instagram story that was fake.
No.
That was quite funny as well. Because I've seen a lot of people get duped by that one, which is quite funny. Formula Fakers, follow them on Twitter. They do fantastic work. it's that horrible thing, because it was always going to happen, wasn't it, in this context. You put Colapinto back in after you get rid of Doohan for crashing too much, he's always going to crash immediately. And he did it twice over the course of the weekend, didn't he?
Yeah.
And it was a fairly just anomalous result. So I can't wait to see how Flavio Briatore is going to kind of defend him for this.
Well, they'll give him a time, won't they? But, you know, if they stand by what they said and it's a 5-race contract, we could have Jack Doohan back by the summer.
It'll be Paul Aaron next.
Yeah, we'll be 4 hours next, actually, wouldn't it? So, we'll see. But it wasn't a great start for Colapinto, but there's definitely speed in there, so we'll give him a chance.
Yeah. Shout out to Nico Hülkenberg as well. Could have made it into Q2, bottled it at the final corner. Put the car through the gravel. But yeah, obviously with Colapinto's mistake, that actually got himself through into Q2, because it meant that Liam Lawson couldn't improve there. So, I tell you what, I understand that people haven't liked Liam Lawson this year, and he can be a bit cocky. He's also been, he's going to be the new Brendan Hartley, isn't he? He's been so unlucky. It seems like really every time there's been like a red flag or an incident at the end of a session, he's always been improving and then knocked out because of it. So, again, in P16 there, alongside Hülkenberg, both Haas's again. This was one of those weekends where Haas had no pace in qualifying or the race. The other options, they have no pace in qualifying and then just rock up in the race. It was really odd. And of course, obviously Yuki as well, out in Q1.
The fact it took them 15 minutes, by the way, to decide if Behrmann or Bortoletto got through to Q2. What was the point of that?
Yeah, bizarre, wasn't it?
How did it take that long to decide? It was basically, the red flag came out basically as Ollie Behrmann was finishing his lap.
Yep.
And it took them 15 proper minutes of delaying Q2 to realise which of these.
I think it was they were also okay because they were trying to sweep up other cars and I think probably do stuff as well to tidy up the circuit, so they weren't under so much time constraint. But then again, we saw what happened in Bahrain, didn't we? Well, Hülkenberg gets knocked out of Q1 halfway through Q3, which is just hilarious. Into Q2.
Yeah, only that could happen to Hülkenberg.
Exactly. Into Q2. Italians across the globe, or Italian fans, we cry. Ferrari
this
fans,
was hilarious,
Antonelli
by the way.
Fans, it was painful. How on earth the end of Q2, this happened?
The end of Q2, you've got Antonelli in 10th, Leclerc in 9th, Hamilton 9th, Leclerc 8th. And then you've got both Aston Martin and Pierre Gasly in the bottom five as it stands, all improving at once. So in the space of 30 seconds, one by one, the Italian driver and both Ferraris get dumped out of Q2. It was phenomenal.
By an Aston Martin that's been awful all year on medium tyres.
Which just ends up getting double Q3.
Out of nowhere. I mean, it was bizarre, wasn't it? Because by the time we got into Q3... for those wondering as well, alongside the Ferraris and Antonelli, it was Bortoleto and obviously Colapinto that got knocked out in Q2. There was, apart from those three, the other two were not obviously a surprise. But the mediums actually genuinely seem to be as good a qualifying tyre as the softs for most teams. Like,
well,
Russell joined them in Q3.
The C6 was struggling by the end of the lap. It was so soft that through the Rivazzas, you were suddenly just running out of grip and temperature was overheating and stuff like that. So, well done, Pirelli, as we say. Bit of variation. I don't mind it. And yeah, naturally, it meant no one would go near the soft tyres in the race. But that means that because you've taken one tyre out of the picture, they can't just all go on hards and do the whole race easily.
Yeah, and I think what they needed was like a C5.5 tyre, wasn't it, this weekend? Or, Jamie, Do you bring back the rule that forces you, if you make Q3, to start on your qualifying time?
No, that's ridiculous.
But that could have been fascinating at the start of this one.
Everyone would have done Q2 on mediums if that was the case.
No, using your Q3 tyre you have to start on.
Well, then even so, I don't think anyone would do Q3 on the soft. It was so useless.
Only announce it after qualifying.
They've changed the rules. 6 p.m. on Saturday night. Yeah, it would have been quite funny though, because somewhere like Monaco, where the tyres, obviously, no matter how bad the tyres are, track position is king, then yeah, you would have to go on the softest of the soft tyres.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. Well, hopefully
and then
we'll
do two laps in the race.
Did we ever get any confirmation? Is Monaco definitely a Force 2 stop this year?
It is, yeah.
That's going to be interesting to talk about Thursday, isn't it? But anyway, by the end of qualifying, that would be Oscar Piastri getting the job done yet again. Brilliant lap time right at the death there. Ahead of Max Verstappen. George Russell, like we said on the mediums, out-qualified Lando Norris, which is quite funny. Norris would line up fourth ahead of both Spaniards of Alonso and Sainz, and then both their teammates of Albon and Stroll, with just the two Frenchmen there in Q3 vibing. Isaac Hadjar, unfortunately for him, his career is going to be over soon because he's going to be given that Red Bull.
Do you think?
I can't see it happening anytime soon, to be honest. But as I was talking to a couple of people about this yesterday, if I was, I know we've spoken about this before, if I was Isaac Hadjar right now, I would be talking to every other team possible on the grid about organising a race seat elsewhere. As I would be genuinely down at Alpine right now going, give me the drive. They bring back the French super team again, which worked so well last time. But if I was Isaac Hadjar, I would be telling them I'm willing to race for free. Just to get
I feel like
in.
Red Bull, they don't have that short a memory in terms of when they last put a rookie of 6 races into that car. It really didn't work out with Liam Lawson. I think they're better off sticking with the experience, even if it's not working out.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm also saying for Hadjar, get out. When, you know, your stock's high at the moment. Get out, get on with it. Enjoy a career that, to be honest, he's
pretty lucky to be given. They won't drop Snowden mid-season.
No, this season. But my point is, go elsewhere. Don't deal with the Red Bull toxicity.
Potentially, yes. But yeah, it still amazes me that has the second Red Bull seat got about 5 points this season, I want to say?
Yeah, not many more than that, I don't think.
It's like a 2012 Ferrari where they're going to be like second in the constructors, where it's all just Max.
Yep.
But
yep.
We'll see.
Exactly. Anyway, we're moving to Sunday though, Jamie. I believe Tsunoda was starting the race from the pit lane. What I noticed though, Tsunoda, and I didn't think you could do this, he did the formation lap and then went back into the pits.
No, that's new for this year. You do the formation lap.
You are allowed to now, okay. Because I thought I saw that and thought, is that right? Is he meant to do that? But yeah, clearly.
No, so I think, was it Behrman who did that at a different race?
Possibly,
someone else started from the pit lane at one point.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Talk us through the start, though, Mr. 183, because it was quite a good one in the end.
Very good one. I tuned into the race on lap two, which was a shame because I missed the lap. But, yeah, you had Oscar Piastri on pole. George Russell, phenomenal start from P3 on the grid. But then Oscar Piastri just blocked his line, and he obviously had Max on the outside, so Russell briefly was in P2, but could not get the job done because he was so hemmed in behind the McLaren. There was a small gap on the inside, but I think he would have been a bit crazy to go for it.
Oh, that would have been a three-car crash, because you know Max would try and sweep in from the outside.
Yeah. Well, clearly Oscar Piastri didn't know that, because he didn't bother covering it off. And he was on the middle of the track, broke a little bit early, probably was slightly arrogantly thinking the McLaren would win, so it doesn't matter if Max is ahead of you after turn one, a bit like Saudi Arabia. And then Max just absolutely sent it. I was trying to think of any recent race start with a move as bold as this one for the lead. It was
Perez's attempted one in Miami last year.
Oh, attempted, so didn't put it off.
Oh, no, but he did almost wipe Max out, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Well, yeah, but I think this will go down as one of the... Like, I know I'm glazing, and I know I'm a Verstappen fan, but when he retires in 2028, and there'll be, like, Max Verstappen's best moments in F1, this will be in there, because that start was crazy good. And won in the race, as spoilers, but it is what won in the race, that...
Oh, absolutely.
So far back.
Absolutely. And I think you say there, obviously, about Oscar. I think he realised by the time he got in and Max was still alongside that he obviously made a mistake already. And, you know, it's all well and good McLaren still just, you know, because I think the psychology from both drivers still is that Max isn't a threat this year. But the problem, of course, with if you spend the whole season of going that Max isn't a threat, soon enough Max is going to be a threat. And I can understand in this scenario Oscar was more interested in just making sure that he outscores Lando again. But the difference of gaining 3 points on someone else but losing 7 points is massive in the sport. So McLaren have got and to start being careful.
I still think on... Without a change in the form book, I think it will be between the McLarens.
Most likely still. But it might well be that we get to two races to go and Max is still... there or thereabouts.
And exactly. The and thing you don't is,
you think about for McLaren as well, you do not want a 2007 repeat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Where you've got Raikkonen just sniffing under their nose and stealing and pinching the world championship.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot, as a team,
because it's entirely possible.
Run that risk again.
The way
exactly.
Max has started this season has been very, very good.
Exactly. Red Bull get one upgrade that gives him a few tenths and suddenly he's there.
Like, all the Spanish Grand Prix rule change.
Exactly.
I'm still holding out hope for
that. This is still the thing we're waiting on, isn't it? And well, that's what, less than 2 weeks' time now.
Yeah. End of this triple header. Then McLaren gets nerfed. Max wins the next 16 races.
I cannot wait for
it
to turn. And I'm not even saying I want to see this happen, but I cannot wait for it just to extend McLaren's advantage at the front. McLaren suddenly win every race by a minute.
A bit of a shame if that happens. But the thing is, I think this really shows the caliber of drivers you've got at the front. Because, yes, Lando and Oscar are both very high-quality drivers. They're probably both in the top six on the grid, I would say. But Max Verstappen is so far clear at the top that...
Oh, I think that's a bit extreme still.
If you swap them round, if you put Max in the McLaren this season, he would have had 6 poles and 6 wins by now. Or is there 7? Have we done 7 races?
We've done 6 so far. I think... Yeah. I think if you put, say, if you gave the two Ferrari drivers that McLaren, I think I don't see Max winning Suzuka. Maybe here with that move at turn one, yes, he still could have, because it seemed like the Red Bull by Sunday was as good as the McLaren anyway. I think it's a little bit harsh on Oscar there as well, because he was trying to play the bigger picture. Once he realised he made the small mistake... It was then more about don't end up in a gravel trap.
Oscar is still in his third season.
Exactly.
This is Max's 2018, which was a shocker. No, 2017.
2017.
Which, to be fair, he just had no luck at all. But he was still, like, unpolished, making mistakes. So Oscar is doing phenomenally well for how junior he is in his career.
And this is the thing, isn't it? Because I think people kind of forget that Oscar is still, you know, the only two drivers that won a world championship with less seasons of experience than Oscar Piastri's got right now. which Jacques Villeneuve had.
Both of them were crazy lucky.
Well, Jacques Villeneuve had a ridiculously OP car. And obviously Hamilton, you know, again, like a Max, was a generational talent. You know, came in and just naturally...
And still needed Timo Glock to slow down the last lap.
Well, that's... it's always... I love that conspiracy, isn't it? Because Glock and... It was his teammate that year? It was Glock Trilli. And Trilli, wasn't it? Their last lap, because they both stayed out on drives, were within a tenth of each other. Despite the fact both cars were all over the road. Like, even... And Trilli had already... Glock had already said, hadn't he, after Monza... Like, he would not give Hamilton any kind of help.
No.
After he squeezed him out.
Yeah.
I love that theory. It's true. So funny.
True. I feel very bad for Timo Glock, because the entire Brazil nation just absolutely loathed him for many, many years.
Yeah. Still do.
That point.
Still do, I'm sure. Yeah. Obviously, like we said, after the start. Well, I wanted to know. I don't know if we ever knew this, the answer to this. Why did Esteban Ocon pit on lap one? Did he get damage? It was a quick pit
there
stop.
There was a replay of... him and Colapinto at Toza.
But he didn't get a front wing change.
As far as I could tell, there was no contact and no puncture. Unless it was like side pod floor into rear tyre or something like that. But it wasn't an obvious puncture. It wasn't obviously damage. And to be honest, the race directors just didn't really care enough to show us.
No. I think they knew this weekend Haas were going to be just terrible again. Like we said, Haas either rock up. They're always terrible in qualifying. They either then get a really good race or are just... worse than Sauber for some reason, which is a little bit weird.
They weren't on it. This is definitely, I would say they were probably the slowest car.
Oh, absolutely. Race, which, absolutely.
Well, unless the Sauber was slower, but Hülkenberg's was really good.
No, that's not the case. But I mean, pretty much from there,
next?
Very, very quickly, we just settled in for an Emilia Romagna Grand Prix, didn't we? It felt like for that, the early races.
Yes, but to be fair, again, mostly down to tyre wear. It was possible to put loads of pressure on the driver ahead and kill their tyres. And to be honest, that is what happened in the early stages with George Russell in third place ahead of Norris.
Yep.
And Norris took a few attempts to get by George Russell. One of the attempts, he just drove into the grass down in towards the Villeneuve chicane or Tambrello. I can't remember which is which.
Tambrello's the first chicane, Gilles Villeneuve's the second chicane.
Okay, Villeneuve.
Yes. Brilliant move.
Well, not that attempt.
Not that attempt,
when he started
lawn
mowing. But it was a brilliant move a couple of laps later when he got it done running outside of Villeneuve. And, George Russell had basically destroyed his tyres, because at that point, I think the entire rest of the grid, down to Ocon, was in a DRS train behind George Russell.
Yep.
So, Norris got through, but meanwhile, was then 6 or 7 seconds off Piastri and Verstappen. So... it didn't look great for Norris at that point, to be honest. And then George Russell, I think, pit at the end of that lap, because Leclerc had boxed early from ninth after overtaking Gasly. We drove into the gravel trying to hold him off and messed it up himself, which was a shame for him. But Leclerc had effectively gone from ninth, got himself out of that train of Russell, pit, and one lap undercut his way past George Russell.
Yeah.
So he's up to net P4, potentially P3 if Norris doesn't get on with it as well. So the undercut looked incredibly powerful in the early stages. And that meant a flurry of drivers, both Aston's pit. Piastri was the big one, wasn't it? The following lap,
yep.
Or a few laps later.
Lap 14.
Yes. And it was, I think it was 2 seconds, 2.5 seconds to Max in the lead. And it's like, maybe not one lap undercut, but two lap undercut. He's probably going to get ahead. But what McLaren didn't bargain for was that a lot of the midfield drivers, regardless if they're on mediums or hards, a lot of them just stayed out. So Piastri was down to, 12th or 13th?
Yeah.
And the likes of Tsunoda, Hülkenberg, Hadjar, Albon, all of them stayed out because they either started on hards or started on mediums and just didn't bother pitting. So, Red Bull were playing the long game in terms of, let him have the undercut, let's not respond to it, and let's see how he gets through this traffic.
I mean, it's one of those things as well, isn't it? Where whenever we talk about how a race could be between a one and a two stop, it always ends up being a one stop. And McLaren just seemingly forgot that with one of their cars.
It does feel that way, because even with the pace delta of the McLaren on fresh tyres versus all of the midfield, it's still, there's one overtaking place realistically per lap. So you're going to be spending one lap at minimum getting past every car. And when your pace is determined by Nico Hülkenberg in a Sauber or Sonoda in a slow Red Bull or a V-carb on
the Red Bull was the fastest car this weekend. Sonoda was just also stuck in traffic and apparently runs far too much downforce.
But I'm not sure Sonoda would have won the race if he was in clear air.
Hey, could have, you never know.
But regardless, yeah, Piastri had a lot of work to do, and especially when Sonoda is there, who is obviously beginning to be used as a chip to play against him. So,
yeah. I mean, he did do a very good job defending, didn't he, by just not
letting him straight through. But, you know, sometimes there's not much you can do. But even so, through Acquamirale and through Variante Alta, your pace is determined by the car ahead of you. And Max was probably gaining a half a second a lap still on his old tyres compared to Piastri. So the gap was just extending. It went from, instead of getting undercut, he actually slightly extended the gap. It was getting on for 32, 33 seconds.
Yeah, it was one of those ones, wasn't it, where every time Piastri was in clear air for a lap, he would go half a second quicker, and then every time he wasn't, he'd go half a second slower.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what Red Bull knew would happen. And I see why McLaren did what they did, because 2v1, you've got to split the strategies. You have to.
They didn't manage that point. Suzuka.
No, but then they're learning from that, aren't they? So, and there's no point really pitting Lando for an undercut because he was 8 seconds back, so there's no chance.
Yeah,
it didn't work out for Piastri.
No, he did. He did a very good job to kind of damage limit his own race as well as he could, obviously, after the mistake. The mistake is a bit strong, but after he wasn't aggressive enough at the start. I mean, unfortunately then, for any kind of battle that could have existed at the front, it was completely destroyed, wasn't it? Because Esteban Ocon's Haas would break down and the VSC would come out. And Jamie had actually spoke about this last week, about how frustrating it is when a safety car or a virtual safety car comes out right when people need to pit. Because it does usually kill the racing, doesn't it? And that's exactly what
it takes a bit of
happened.
Jeopardy out of it.
Yeah.
When everyone pits at once. I don't hate this one as much.
Of course
as when
you don't, because it helped for Verstappen.
Well, let me finish.
Here we go.
When it's a full safety car, say a full safety car came out on lap 12, just before the pit stop window opens. The problem there is everyone pits, and there's no variety, and there's no tyre delta. So that one is the worst of the worst for me. This one is obviously, it screws over half the grid, but you still do have variation. And you do have a mixed up field, which means the race can go on without being awful. So, yes, it's unfortunate for the likes of Piastri and both Aston Martins, who got absolutely done dirty by the safety car. But it didn't kill the race in the way that it could have done. Because last week, in the pre-show, I was like, a safety car around lap 10 or 12 always destroys a race, especially somewhere like Imola or Monaco, where it's hard to pass.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, obviously, this one wasn't even a full safety car, it was a VSC. Which meant that even though you get a big advantage if you haven't pit yet, of course it meant that all the other guys don't get to bunch up on you anyway. But things were made, it did kind of in this instance start allowing us to see a few more overtakes, didn't it? Lewis Hamilton, after the VSC, would slowly start picking up a few cars because he started on the hards, actually got a tyre disadvantage in the early stages, and then once kind of the advantage swung the other way. Ferrari, they were really odd because race pace, they were probably the third fastest car this weekend. It was close between, but I think they probably had the advantage of a Williams. But they would.
And Mercedes,
exactly. But it was kind of just the fact they weren't even that far off in qualifying, were they? I think it was 4.5 tenths and just over half a second to P1 at the end of Q2. But it was just everybody else was closer. So it was a really, really weird one.
You can point a little bit to, you know, had they gone on mediums like the Aston Martins did, they'd probably get through.
Yeah.
Had the drivers pulled out a slightly better lap. Obviously, you don't know how they got on, but...
The fact they were so close together makes you believe they both got a lot out of it.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, there's always an extra tenth, isn't there? And I'm not saying that Lance Stroll is a better qualifier than Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc.
104
but the medium
tyres
probably was
one.
The main one. Well, yeah, 104 plus whatever Leclerc's got. He must be about 25 by now, surely.
Oh, it'd be about 40 for Leclerc, surely, and three wins to go along with it. absolutely fantastic. But yeah, we would see, like we said, Hamilton picking off a few more cars. Hülkenberg, I mean, if ever he was going to overtake anybody, it would have to be the Aston Martins, wouldn't it? And of course, because of that VSC, there was a little bit of hopium that Alex Albon could get Williams a podium on raw pace, which would have been fantastic because they were absolutely weapons this weekend, weren't they? Of kind of
Signs quickest
right
in
there.
Q2 in a Williams.
Fantastic. Absolutely. I love the fact we're seeing a proper Williams resurgence at the moment. I hope it sticks around for the rest of the year.
And they
into
are
26.
Genuinely, like, they are so comfortably ahead of the midfield. They trouble Mercedes and Ferrari more often than they are troubled by the midfield.
Absolutely. And so, going into Monaco next weekend, I'm really hoping they can keep this up because that would be fantastic.
Carlos Sainz has always been good at Monaco as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Fifth on the grid in 2016, that's Toro Rosso.
He was. Yeah. He went, sorry? Oh, Sainz, sorry, not Albon, ignore me.
2016. Max wasn't even at Toro Rosso.
I was
going to
say.
But he did crash out a lot.
He did. He did. And then, of course, for the Italian fans, yes, you had Ferrari doing well. Oscar Piastri, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, even I should say. The car just decided the Mercedes felt Italian this weekend was what happened, and it broke down.
Yeah, and to be fair, he wasn't on for great things anyway. He probably would have got a few points.
Yeah, it would have been like an eighth or a ninth.
That did mean we got a full safety car because Kimi did a worse job than Esteban Ocon
apparently,
at stopping in the right place.
I think that was just FIA script.
Potentially.
The only thing I think that could have made a difference is if Kimi's car had accidentally been stuck in gear or something and they had to get a tractor to move it.
I did wonder, because they can't obviously then push it as easily. But they needed to get the crane out, so the safety car by protocol has to come out, which I don't, you know.
It's fair enough. Again, Jules, of course, as always, you've got to be careful with these kind of things. But of course, that would then basically mean that most drivers would pit again. Oscar Piastri stayed out, Charles Leclerc stayed out. And then basically the last kind of real thing we saw, wasn't it? Which I'm staggered Ferrari have got away with this, was the incident between Leclerc and Albon.
Yeah, it felt a very poor taste, didn't it? When you've got the big boys of the FIA, the Ferrari International Assistants. Albon's P4, Leclerc's P4, Albon's P5, Hamilton's P6. Leclerc on old tyres, Hamilton and Albon both on newer tyres. And Albon can see that the podium on the cards genuinely, because Piastri's on old tyres still. If he can get Leclerc quickly, I genuinely think he would have started closing the gap on Piastri.
It could
I don't
have been
think
close.
Time to pass.
Yeah.
But Albon, therefore, was being quite hasty in his attempts to get past Leclerc and potentially opened himself up to this, but tried to go on the outside of turn one. Leclerc is having none of it at all. Shoves him off, makes him run over the gravel. That gives Lewis the place on Albon for P5. And then naturally, they swapped the Ferraris the next lap, Lewis up to P4. And then they tell Leclerc to give the position back to Albon. So, because they knew a penalty was on the way.
In one sense, you're kind of there going, like, fair enough. Leclerc gave away the advantage he gained. But you're kind of also there going, on the other hand, you've just, like, what stops now in the future? Someone barreling someone else off the road? Because in my personal opinion, in that incident, that should have been a penalty for Leclerc. Albon was fully alongside. He was going to make the corner. He was fully slowed down, unlike Max in Jeddah. He just gets forced out when he's fully wheel-to-wheel, and Ferrari got away with it. And I think Hamilton would have got past Albon by the end, or at least it would have been a really good fight.
I don't think so.
but it was just completely the advantage of being given to Lewis, and Albon couldn't do anything about it. And of course, you let Albon back by after everything's all said and done. And then you kind of go, well, we gave the place back. We didn't gain an advantage from it. And you're there going, that car didn't
gain
an advantage.
Yeah. Somewhere like, you say Monaco, for instance. If someone cuts the chicane on lap one, gains a position, and then backs you up like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
For two laps and then lets the position back, then this driver, yes, he's got the advantage back relative to you, but relative to everyone else he's battling,
in a hypothetical land. So Oscar Piastri is leading Monaco next weekend. Lando Norris is in third with Verstappen between him. Lando cuts the chicane, gets ahead of Max, stays behind Oscar, backs up 10 seconds. It's not going to happen, of course, and then obviously just Oscar walks away with it. You know, it's one of those things, again, that because it's Formula One, it's now open to manipulation, which will be what happens at some point.
And to be fair, F1 has always been about who can interpret and abuse the rules the best. So I don't mind it.
It goes against the spirit of racing, though, doesn't it? That kind of thing.
But I'm all about the dark arts of any sport, really.
Yeah. Up to a certain point. You don't like it when it doesn't favour your driver, but there we are. Well, it would be Verstappen, though.
He doesn't get done by it. He's the one executing the dark arts, usually.
Well, exactly. It would be Verstappen, though, that takes the win. Lando Norris, a decent recovery. Actually, probably a little bit lucky to get ahead of Oscar Piastri by the end. Distracted kind of screwed him over a bit. Hamilton, a decent recovery for Ferrari. They were quite quick in race pace. It kind of fell for them ahead of Albon and Leclerc.
Strategy, yeah. The strategy, safety car timing was good for Hamilton.
Exactly. Russell kind of survived to save Mercedes. A pretty bad weekend in the end. With Sainz, Hadjar just spent what felt like all day just inside the top 10. And Tsunoda as well did a pretty good job to recover there as well. And was that Alonso's first points of the year? Or was he 11th?
Sorry. No, he came 11th.
He did come 11th, I thought so.
I feel for Alonso because he was genuinely P5. Well, he qualified 5th. Very good qualifying. And then the race just fell away from him. The safety car timing, the strategy, everything just went wrong.
It made me chuckle.
Yeah, I was sad because Hülkenberg was flirting with 10th for a while, but it went away from him. But
that also made
Sauber will score by the end of the season.
Again, you reckon it's going to happen. Fair enough.
I called that after Melbourne, didn't I?
You did.
He came 7th in Melbourne.
You did.
And it wasn't far away this time. You know, a little McLaren crash when they had their battle on the last few laps.
Hopium.
And then suddenly you've got Hülkenberg the points.
Hopium. Jamie reeks of hopium, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen. You can hear it. Right, we've only got 5 minutes because Jamie's got to go to work, so we've got to smash through everything,
yes.
Jamie. We'll do the quiz last, I think. We'll do everything else, the important stuff.
Okay.
Predictions recap.
Predictions.
What were the scores on the doors?
The scores were 3 points in my favour, 20-17.
We don't talk about this weekend.
So, I think I did well. Did I write it down?
You didn't. You were useless.
No.
So I had to go back through to get the graphic for the channel.
Do you want to go through it then?
We both didn't get qualifying right. I'm pretty certain I said Lando,
no,
you said Max. So there were no points
correct.
There.
I was very happy after the first runs, but
yes. I said Lando Norris to win. So I get a point there.
1 point.
I get Oscar Piastri in P2, so I get 1 point there.
1 point.
And I said Kimi Antonelli P3. Why?
Oh, dear. Oh, dearie me.
I jinxed the poor kid. Kimmy, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
2 points.
Yeah, 2 points for me.
Takes you up to 19.
You said Verstappen pole. No points.
Almost.
And I don't think the top three really matters, does it? You said Verstappen win. You said Norris P2. You said Oscar P3.
Oh, 26 points. Thank you very much.
So
6 points
lucky.
From the perfect race.
After
to
I
fair,
did it
I will back. I will take it as skill that I got Verstappen to win because that was always going to happen.
Was it
the fact Norris beat Piastri was quite lucky?
Was it fair enough? Fair enough. That is sickening. Absolutely sickening. I hate this game.
Exactly.
Race rating, Jamie.
It was decent.
It was.
I might go a little 6.5.
I was going to go with a 6. Which I think is probably your extra half point because of the drivers you like, which is fair enough.
The bias is real. Anything else?
Driver of the day?
Max Verstappen.
Fair enough.
But I will shout out Fernando Alonso because he was horrendously unlucky.
Okay. Yeah. I think
and Lewis Hamilton came 12-4.
I'm gonna say Lewis. I'm going to allow my bias in a little bit there and say Lewis is the driver of the day. Did very well early on to kind of stay out of trouble, and the strategy did come to him. Right, Jamie, we're going to smash out your quiz really fast.
We are.
2005 San Marino Grand Prix. You have got to name me every driver that was a classified finisher. If you get one wrong, you're out. There's 13 answers.
Oh, gosh.
Go.
Okay, 13. A lot of DNFs. Alonso,
yes.
And Schumacher,
yes.
Were the top two. Raikkonen probably retired because he was in that McLaren.
I just need finishers. Give me names.
Finishes. Fisichella.
Incorrect. You got 2 points. That might be one of the worst quizzes we've ever done.
Right. 30. That means what? There's 8, 9 DNFs?
7. Which is already a bad
7
start.
DNFs.
Yeah. Well, there was actually only 5 DNFs.
What?
Both BARs got disqualified. This was their
fantastic
fuel. So I thought that might catch you.
Oh, and they got banned from Monaco, but they didn't have to race anyway.
Exactly. No, they didn't race
in
Monaco.
To Fisichella?
No, they didn't race in Monaco.
Oh, they didn't race in Monaco.
No, Button did commentary. It was really bizarre that weekend.
Nice.
Fisichella had an accident on lap five. Patrick,
who took him out?
I don't know. I can't remember. Patrick Friesacker had a clutch failure on lap eight. Raikkonen had a drive shaft failure on lap nine. Barrichello had an electrical failure, and Christian Albers had a hydraulics failure.
So who was third?
Montoya? Alex Wurz.
That was
Montoya wasn't on the grid because he'd fallen. No, he'd injured himself playing tennis. He definitely hadn't fallen off a quad.
What? 2005 sounds ridiculous. What was going on?
It was a lot of crazy. Yeah, that was how Wurz got the podium, sir.
Interesting.
That was one of the worst misses you've ever done.
He deserved
longer
in F1, not going to lie.
He did.
Little side note. I like Alex Wurz.
He did. He certainly did. Thank you all so much for listening. Apologise with how rushed the end of this show is. We need to get yourselves subscribed so Jamie can just do this full time. It would be much, much better.
I can quit my job. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
For everybody. Exactly. Make it happen, ladies and gents. But yeah, we'll return later on this week ready to preview the Monaco Grand Prix.